Scientists say one reason it is so difficult to control the spread of COVID-19 is that many infected people show only mild symptoms or no symptoms at all and don't know that they're contagious. Jeffrey Shaman has been looking into this. He's a professor of environmental health sciences at Columbia University's Mailman School, and he joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
So your research published in the journal Science this month found that 86% of all infections that happened before China instituted severe travel restrictions in late January were undocumented. Does that mean that 4 out of 5 people who were spreading this disease had no symptoms?
You know, it's not that they didn't have symptoms. They may have had mild symptoms, sort of like the crud that you and I would experience with, you know, maybe a sore throat or chills or a little bit of a body aches that are associated with getting a mild respiratory illness. But it's not the type of thing that actually slowed them down. So they may mostly, for the most part, have experienced some symptoms at some point, but it didn't keep them home, didn't stop them from getting on public transportation, going to work, going to school, getting on airplanes and going on business trips.
But you say that they were a major driver of spreading this disease.
Yeah, so what we found was that 85%, 86% actually, of people were undocumented infections, meaning that they mostly fell in this category of mild symptomology and still going about their business. We also found that per person, these people were a little more than half as contagious as the people who were admitted to hospitals or sought clinical care. So while that on a per-person basis, they were less contagious, because there's so many more of them, they actually contributed to the vast majority of the spread. We can actually take the model that we use to make these inferences and identify these numbers, and we can then shut off their ability of these undocumented infections to actually spread the disease at all. And what we find when we do this is that 80% of documented cases disappear as well. So these silent spreaders are going out in the community and they're distributing the virus and they're setting up chains of transmission where a lot of people are subsequently becoming infected and they infect more people. And the majority of those infections are in fact mild and are not people who then would then go and seek medical care. And this is very consistent with what happens with a lot of the seasonal viruses that circulate around, things like rhinovirus and influenza and the endemic coronaviruses. The majority of the infections are undocumented. People don't feel the need to go see a doctor. And as a consequence, we don't know that they're there. Those people don't stay home. They go about their business. They engage with the community pretty much as they normally would, and they spread it broadly.
So how do you deal with that? Is the only way to deal with that to just test everybody?
You know, that's what some of the societies in the world have done. So what the Chinese did when they implemented these strong control measures on January 23rd is that they basically, you know, restricted travel. They shut down schools and businesses. They had everybody stay home. They enforced it forcibly. And they did a lot of contact tracing. So they did a much more aggressive campaign of swabbing people to find out where the infections were, making sure those infected persons really stayed isolated, and engaging in finding who their contacts were and quarantining them. The South Koreans did the same thing to very good effect when they had the outbreak in Daegu, which is their fourth largest city. And they were really informed by their prior experience with MERS, which is a related virus a few years back. Mm-hmm. And this actually proved to be effective. But the measures are very strong. They're somewhat draconian. You know, the information that we hear is that people, that the officials were going into people's credit cards, looking where they'd shopped, looking where they'd gone around, and then going to those locations and finding people who had been in contact with them potentially and testing them. A very aggressive campaign to identify where the virus may have spread.
How did you determine these numbers in your research? And do you think there's any possibility that you could be overestimating the effect of these, quote, silent spreaders?
Well, you know, it's certainly possible. Ours is one study of this. The way we did it is that we're modelers. We make a mathematical model that describes the transmission of the virus in a way that we think represents reality. In this case, we represented the transmission within and between 375 cities in China. We inform that model with observations and movement data, and then we try to run what's called an inference problem and estimate those critical parameters. Here, what fraction of the people are undocumented, what fraction of infections are undocumented, and how contagious are they? The reality is it's consistent with what we see in terms of the spread of the virus and how quickly it moved geographically, both within China and outside of China. Now, there is the added wrinkle that there is pre-symptomatic shedding of this virus, but our model actually does implicitly capture that. We've also applied it to the United States in a slightly different form. And here, where testing is less, we're finding actually only 1 in 11 people are being documented. The other thing is, after the travel restrictions are imposed, our same model estimates that about two-thirds of people were identified in China when they were in this period of much more active contact tracing and using of tests.
So given all of that, what do you think that the U.S. is doing right, and what do you think that the U.S. is doing wrong? I think of President Trump saying, well, I'm not going to get tested because I haven't had any symptoms, which, according to what you're saying, wouldn't matter at all, because you could either not have symptoms or you could be pre-symptomatic. But yep. In terms of how the U.S. is handling the virus, what do you think?
Well, I do think there are some things we could do better. Look, the main issue here is that we're dealing with a very challenging virus that unfortunately is very dangerous for the world at large. And it is so because it has three ingredients that come together to make it so. Firstly, it's an emergent novel respiratory virus to which the majority of the population, if almost 100%, are susceptible to it. So those susceptible people, which is you and me, are the tinder that allows this to spread like wildfire. The fact that it's respiratory also allows it to transmit very efficiently. People don't necessarily have to overlap in time and space in order to have transmission, because somebody can walk into a room and to deposit the virus on surfaces in the air, and then somebody can come in later and actually pick it up from them. The second thing is that it has these mild infections that support the stealth transmission. The majority of people who are getting infected are not documented, and they're spreading it in the community unwittingly. And the third thing that makes it very dangerous is it has this fat tail, where the symptom output is, in some instances, the symptoms for people are very severe, and it's causing high rates of mortality, which is incredibly problematic. In order to deal with it, you really want to get out in front of it as quickly as possible. Testing is a really effective way of doing it, particularly early in an outbreak. Doesn't mean you want to do it willy-nilly, but it means that when you identify people who are infected, you want to find out who they were in contact with, quarantine those people. If they begin to manifest, test them, and then test their contacts as well. The difficulty is that in a place such as New York right now, where I live, it's gotten kind of out of hand. And the question is there the capacity? Are there even the swabs available to conduct testing at the level we would want to try to flatten that curve and bring it back down? And that's the challenge that we're facing right now.
Let's say that I go to the supermarket. It's one of the only places I go now, but occasionally I will have to go to the supermarket to get some food. If somebody breathes near me, can I get this virus from that? Or does it really have to be that somebody's gotten some saliva or a droplet of moisture onto a piece of fruit, I touch that and put my hand on my face?
The answer, unfortunately, is that we don't know. One of the outstanding questions and issues associated with all respiratory viruses is that we really don't know the mode of transmission, that is, the way in which they are transmitted and which one is dominant. We know how they can be. We know they can be airborne. We know it can be droplets, people spraying each other in the face when they cough or sneeze or speak or even breathe. We also know that it can be that some of those droplets settle on surfaces that somebody else comes along and touches, and then they eat a cheeseburger, they rub their eyes or whatnot, and they're going to transfer it to themselves that way. Those are the three main routes that we're talking about for viruses like this. We don't have good evidence to even define how flu is transmitted. This is something that's hotly debated and has important implications for the control of the virus. We don't know the answer to that for this. So the question for the grocery store is to be careful, to wash your hands afterwards, wash your produce, and try not to get too close to people as you're moving around when you're having to expose yourself in situations like that.
That is Jeffrey Shaman, who's a professor of environmental health sciences at Columbia University Mailman School. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Be well.
And by the way, some people who have no symptoms or just mild symptoms of coronavirus have been reporting that they are experiencing a loss of their sense of smell or taste. A British doctor who's seen a number of people with just those symptoms tells the Washington Post that she hopes by raising awareness, she'll stop some of these silent spreaders of COVID-19.